Hello, everyone, and welcome to the AdDot podcast. Today I have with me Marc Planagumà, and he's in the Barcelona, Spain area. And I got to meet Marc in the fall of 2023. I taught a workshop in Barcelona, and the company where he works, Adivent, was a sponsor of my workshop. And then I got to talk to Marc about his work with data, and especially with interest in data mesh. So we're going to get into sort of the data topic overall today with Marc. And then as we go along, we'll get further into the topic of data mesh and a way of thinking about data mesh and how you could potentially implement that. So welcome, Marc. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me in your podcast.
So could you tell us a little bit about yourself, your overall experience with data? So, you know, as a first question, would you describe your work with data as mostly big data, fast data, et cetera? How do you describe it?
Good. Well, my journey in data starts just after the end of the university. I started my first job in Telefonica R&D, in a research institution of Telefonica Telco, in big telco in Spain. Just working in web semantics, starting with one of the area of knowledge science, and starting there, and was evolving, and was the moment, this was around 2005, and was the moment when the big data technologies was starting and exploding, Hadoops and the distributed systems was started to be done for the used for the analytics processing. And I was doing this movement to study some distributed systems and do these first steps on data engineering, when was not called data engineering in their moment, but was engineering for data. And I was in the research institution during 8-10 years in Telefónica R&D, in Eurecat, in a research institution in Catalonia, and in Berlin Big Data Center. And I did a jump on the industry, first on Zurich Insurance, to build the first data lake, the first big data platform in Zurich Insurance, in the office that they have on Barcelona, and was the European data lake of Zurich. And I was there as a platform manager building, but not also the platform, the team that was doing the platform. And then I was there for 3-4 years, and I did a jump on Lidl. This a really big retailer, really famous on Europe, but also is on the States. It's a 3 top retailers in the world. And I was there also because it's a huge company, but it's an analogic company, and was this company that had a big data platform as well, and was there to build the data platform, focus for the loyalty program, not for the full company, just for the loyalty program called Lidl Plus, and was a kind of a spin-off doing this platform for Lidl, and was a really successful effort and exercise, and the company was absorbing the spin-off and using this platform not just for loyalty program, move this platform also to use it for logistics, for sales, these kind of things. And 2 years ago, I did another change on Adevinta, that is a really huge marketplace hub for different marketplaces for ads on Europe mainly, but also in other parts of the world, and doing and evolving the data platform that is focused on the Spain marketplaces. Then it's true that I was seeing the change coming from non-digital native to a digital native company, that it's a quite change on terms of data. But then this is my journey on data that was starts from my first experience after the university. I am a telecommunications engineer, and then was first on research, then on applied architecture and building platforms in different companies, And to say it's using all my experience. It starts from data and continues on data. And then for me, then for this reason, for me, I think that data is, it's exciting, it's fun, and it's my proposal of professional career.
Okay. Well, that covers a lot. Thank you for sharing this. And okay, let's, with that background, let's talk a bit about the application of different approaches. For example, you have, even with data, used kind of a DDD or domain-driven design mindset. How would you describe that with using it with data strategies and integration?
Yes, this is specifically in Adevinta. I have been working on that because I started on Adevinta in order to do a new evolution of the platform that comes from a self-serve platform and a self-serve platform team providing work environment and tools for the rest of data, BIers, data science, MLs. And the idea was not just to evolve to be a tool providing, a service providing, be a kind of data products platform provider, and in order that not just the tooling and the escalation was right, also the governments and the policies and the way of working and the goal to achieve a golden path for everybody was something thinking by in the beginning by design in the tooling and in this moment when the platform it's going in this direction is thinking not just in provide technology, in provide tooling, also provide a way of working and a process is when appears some aspects, and one of them is the DDD, because at the end the concept of domain appears because depending of the domain there are different ways of to organize the data and then I can explain some initiatives. We put data contracts in action on our lakehouse. We put a semantic layer in action in our lakehouse. And in this, for instance, in these two ideas, in the data contracts and the semantic layer, the concept of organized by domains exists, do modeling by domain exists. And then some concepts like obicus language, like a boundary context, these kind of things that is common on DDD design for microservices, for instance, also is appearing in a scope of a data lake or the lakehouse. That not everywhere, in other places, lakehouse it's putting on the table the idea of domain. But in our case, once we are not just want to provide tooling, we want to provide governance in automatic way, that we want to centralize how to build this domain modeling, and for this reason, we have to think about it and apply some concepts. And it's true that I had in the past also experience in the analytical world, also in the operational world, and I know DDD from this moment, and I think that was really, really useful. See some aspects and some knowledge that is applying in the application world on the analytic. That right now it's not, it's something new. It's not something really mature right now.
Okay, great. And just for people who are listening that maybe don't know much about data mesh, I would describe the. Well, let's start with data warehouse or something like that. The idea with warehouse is that all these different business units, groups, whatever, are pushing their operational data at a big storage area that can be used to run queries on the data and learn from the data, run analytics on it. But kind of the imbalance that happens there is the warehouse experts, as in the people who know how to use the warehouse software, get backlogged with a lot of different requests from all these different teams and they don't know the data well because they don't own it. And where data mesh shifts that is to have the teams who are working on a domain, or if you will, a single bounded context as an operational, kind of data, the model itself, but then you've got this data model of some kind for operational. Now, because you know that data well enough, you are in a good position to create the contracts for whoever needs this data. And you are sort of going to manage the data right there alongside your operational data. You'll have analytics data. Is that sort of like a, I know it's a little bit not a brief summary, but I think it's necessary.
Well, really good context. Yeah.
Okay. So that's the big shift. Now, let's think about this for, in terms of data contracts. How do you, as in a role in using various data architectures, how do you use contracts? How do you develop contracts? How do they play in your architecture?
Good, and thank you for the introduction, because it's true. It's a mesh. It's now a hype. It's really famous analytics world, but it's a hype. It's not for everybody. But we have implemented from 1 year ago data contracts in top of a lakehouse, specifically for feeding the lakehouse, the first layers of our lakehouse. And it's true, and it's really important to say that we are thinking or rethinking this lakehouse to be part of not just be a mix between a data lake or a data warehousing, is be part of a data mesh. And for me, the change is that one of the more important change between lakes, warehouse, and mesh, it's that the minimum building block is changing. Instead of be the platform that in the warehouses, we have procedures inside, we have models inside, but the minimum building block, everything is inside the one platform. In the lake as well, everything is one lake in different layers, but in one lake. In mesh, the minimum building block is the data product. And it's similar like when the microservices architectures, the minimum building block is not the server, it's the microservices that is autonomous on this way. Then the idea on data mesh is move this concept on data and say that data product, it's the data asset itself, but it's also all the services and all the automations in top of this data asset that converts this in something autonomous. Then, and combining these data products is when you draw a mesh. The data products are the nodes, and the edges is drawing a mesh. Then, in one of these kind of data products, that is, are called source aligned data products. It's a specific data product that is just doing something really important but simple.
And just to interject here, source doesn't mean source code. It means that the source of the original data is the source of the node in the mesh data, right?
Exactly. It's one of these data products, but represents the enabling of the data from some source, from a database, from a microservices, from somewhere, from some operational source that is generating data, and put this asset inside the mesh as a primary material to start the analytics. Then, as you said before, data mesh is one of the four pillars of the data mesh, is the domain-driven organization. It's saying that you have to organize your organization, because then data mesh is not just architecture, it's a paradigm how to organize your company. It's saying that you have to divide your company by domains. Then means that the owners of the data who produce the data, it's divided by domain. And in all these domain owners are the responsibles or the accountables to enable their data. Instead of the legacy approach that the data platforms was gathering and doing cherry picking from different places to get the data, isn't another way around. It's instead of pulling, it's pushing. Then the domain owners are the owners of their data, data inside as a boundary of a domain, and are the accountables to fit the data. And for this proposal, we said, well, instead of do this manually coding, doing pipelines, these kind of things, let's do a declarative process where the owner can do a contract in a process doing a JSON file. Could be a YAML file, could be, there are different ways how to do it, but we are using JSON files because it's also used in the company for microservices too. With this declarative process, the owner can say, I have this data, published in this Kafka topic, for instance, with this description, with this version, contains PII for compliance checking, contains privacy data or not, these kind of things. And with this declarative, everything in automatic way is happening, then it's published on the lakehouse. And the compliant jobs are workly automatic way. The observability about who is using is an automatic way. The publication on the data catalog is an automatic way. It's a way how once the feeding of the lakehouse, instead of being centralized in a gestion team, is distributed in different ways, we was thinking in order to provide the tooling for all of them, in order to do it in the same way and not have a lot of ways how to fit the same thing, just one declarative way using, in this case, the concept of data contracts. And doing this data contract, the pipeline is done automatic way, the scheduling is done automatic way, then it's generating code in a kind of declarative framework.
Yeah, very cool. So just to kind of be clear, it sounds like you've taken a DevOps approach, right? Sort of a, because you are...
DataOps,
Yeah, data ops. But the point being that you have these pipelines that are delivering the deployment. And while the deployment is, let's say, in your own infrastructure that the team owns for the rest, for operations, is now also going to be their analytics sort of infrastructure, but making, basically publishing the availability of this to a catalog is the kind of, well, the more, I don't know, intense or tricky part of it, right? How do you make it available? Yeah.
Yes, because one of the, In data, one of the more complex part, it's make it the data discoverable, because this is one of the tricky parts of for instance on the probably not on warehouses on a small data scenarios, but in the big data and the lakes where everybody is putting everything there, have discoverable data, it's so hard because you have a lot of data, but just the feeders, just he put the data there, knows that it's there. The rest needs to rediscover the data from the company again and again. Then the idea is who knows better the data? It's not who is pulling, it's the creator of this data. Let's put in their side the responsibility, the accountability, to put in a best way the data and in the best information and description, and then put it in a way where the ingestion, when the ingestion is done, the publication on the catalog, the publication on the different places on the official internal site of the documentation, have to be done in an automatic way. Because if it's not in an automatic way, this is something that will be missing for somewhere and someone. And when this data have to be discovered, it's true that we'll be in the lake, but we'll be not in the documentation, we'll be not in the data catalog, and then we'll be refit again, sure. And one of the biggest problems of the lake is the reusability. The most part of the data on the lakes are not used at all. I only use it some parts, but it's not because the data is not valuable. It's because nobody knows that it's there.
You can't find it. So the way I think of it is, a team pushes all this operational data out to the warehouse, and they know that some consumers will consume 15 or 20% of the overall types of data, right? And then, but the rest still gets pushed out there, and people go looking for the data. It's like, okay, where is this? And it's among the other 80, 85% of the data types that nobody even knows exist, right? They're just not there. Whereas if this is put on a team that owns the operational data, they're in a really good position to just tell you the whole story of what's available. And they can literally make their whole big blob of data available, even if it's not well structured. Then you can have a contract around it, but people can still know how to find it in general, right? Is that the idea?
Yes, and one of the things on this direction that our contracts have is that you have to put the owner and the responsible and once the owner is not a team of with the name of tooling, or it's the team with the name of the domain, when you have to find the data, you are looking and searching the data by meaning, not by I want data that comes from Resif. No, I want data that means user tracking, this kind of things. And then the idea of our contract is push to have this kind of metadata instead of have the source, the name of the series, this kind of things, have who is the owner, what's the scope of this owner, to make it discoverable, the data, in terms of meaning, in terms of semantic meaning, not in terms of where is and how is it structured and what's the name of the original schema, because could be that the schema could be related with the domain or not, could be related with another name that you can imagine. Then this is one of the things, for this reason, when I say in the beginning that we are putting governance by design, it's because at the end, the data governance go in this direction. It's that I want to make it discoverable, the data, in a business language, in a domain language. Then I don't want to discover the data for which, what is the name of the team who's integrated, or what is the name of the schema, or what is the name of the microservices that is creating this data, because I don't know in a business way. I want to find this data for the meaning. And then putting this data contracts, and specifically for source-aligned data products, it's true that when some analytics team is looking for data, one of the things that we are dividing is if you are looking source-aligned data products or consumer-aligned data products. Consumer-aligned is a data set that is really complex and is done doing some analytics of some owner, but when you are looking for this, it's because you are doing some complex analytics that is already done. But if your proposal is just primary material, then you have to look only on the source-aligned data products, and you have classified this by the owners, and the owners are classified by domains. Then is when starts this domain-driven design appears in the catalog, because first the organization is divided by domains, and the owners are the publishers, and the metadata that is providing it's so rich enough to do this domain structure where you are consuming or where you are looking for the data.
Yeah, and even if it's unstructured, they can still find it, and then they can approach the team and say, we need this kind of query, or we need this kind of document pushed to us, or however they go about retrieving it or getting that data, yeah?
Yes, and also this is helping to us. Another thing that they commented, once we have this source aligned classified by domains, it's possible to build a kind of market If you have products, you can build a market of these products. It's a kind of market where some domain aggregation could be already done. Then is for this reason, a part of this source-aligned data products that is accessible for everybody, we have a domain marketplace where in automatic way, in a kind of mapping, also declarative, the company is able to aggregate different source-aligned data products that means a specific domain. And then this is reducing the dimension that, for instance, in the source-aligned data products, probably we have 4,000 tables that you can find in a catalog, wherever, but it's a lot. But in this market of domains, we have right now 13 tables. That the dimension is it's so less, but our really big tables is using the we are using this modeling technique of one big table at this college. It's put a lot of but it's if you want instead of consume the data really granularly object by object, you want just the all the user tracking in the same in the same table. For us, it's something quite automatic because once the source-aligned data products are really good classified by domain, we can do an automation to build this view of one big table with all the objects that means or are in this bounding context of domain there. And this, for people that is really technical, for data engineers, this kind of things, probably it's not really useful because they know how to find the data in a granular way. But for the business analyst and for the people that is not on wants to use data, wants to explore data, probably it's more easy try to find all the data of the company in three big tables. That means, or 13 big tables that means 13 concepts of domain really known on the company. Probably it's more easy to know and find and discover and do some tests in top of this scenario that go in the list of all 4,000 objects that the company have. It's a matter that when you are working on a platform that wants to democratize the data, you need to offer different ways how to consume the same. Not a lot of ways, because then you cannot scale, you cannot control a lot of ways, but probably some number adapted on analysts, adapt on ML engineers, adapt on data engineers, adapt on BIers, because it's not everybody consumes the data in the same way.
Yeah. So, it's very interesting. And we'll get it more into the tooling a little bit further in. But what I was thinking of now is from the previous topic of domain-driven design, and now, kind of this contract approach and overall contract being kind of like domain-driven teams own the data. I imagine that like governance in Spain, right, Adivinta Spain, can have an influence, encourage, nudge along the overall organization to say, okay, we need to put you into domain thinking areas. Let's say that might even be a challenge because of just other commitments that people have. But now, how are you going to have this? I know you're influencing across Western Europe, at least, and even around the world. How is this going to work? I mean, that's going to be tedious, I would think.
Yes, and it's true that right now Adivinta is on a strategy of verticalization. Was in the past divided by countries. The country concept had a lot of importance in Adivinta. Now it's doing a switch to be divided by three big verticals. It's re-commerce, it's ads of consumer goods, mobility, everything about mobility, and real estate, and plus emergence. It's real estate and others like jobs, like vacations, these kind of things that are in this vertical. And we are moving, and it's true that in Germany exists another platform, in France exists another platform, and we are doing this transition to, instead of be platforms for countries with connections and interoperability between them, just to do just one mesh for these three verticals of the company. And I'm saying a mesh and not just one platform, because the idea of transform the minimum building block from platform to data products means that the mesh, the nodes of this mesh are not the Spain platform and the Germany platform. It's data products done in a kind of infrastructure and tooling connect between them. Then it's true that we have a plan to evolve the platform of Spain, have to transform it a lot and have to converge in this, will we call it DNA platform for data and analytics platform in the full Adevinta. But for instance, we are working on move the data contracts of Spain in the rest of the company because not exist for this proposal. But it's true that we can get some other aspects done in Germany, done in France. We are in this moment of try to get the best value for everywhere and interconnect and create just a common work environment for data analytics in the full Adevinta. But it's just the mindset that we are not in a plan of platform migrations. We are in a platform transforming instead of understand this platform as a black box with data inside. It's just data products experience plane where you can build a data product. This data product, it's using infrastructure, of course. It's on top of storage. It's using a computer engines, whatever. But it's autonomous on this way, like it's microservices. And this data product is connected with another data product done in another point of the company. And in this scenario, it's true that we have an entry point really critical in the company. This is the data catalog. That it's not just the data catalog, it's also the data ops tooling, where the people is creating the contracts, where the people is putting, adding or removing access to the data to a different way, where the operations is concentrated there. It's the tool is the data hub tool. It's an open source project that comes from LinkedIn in the beginning. And now it's a really huge open source project. We have this data catalog as an entry point. And the idea is that our semantic layer, our contracts, do the transformation in order that everything done that at the end it's converted in a data product could be used, reused, and connected with another data product from another place of the company. And this is the idea that we want to achieve. It's achieve this feeling or this concept of have just one way how to work in data, but in the back part, this could be several platforms or several technologies behind.
Cool, very nice. And this LinkedIn tool, you showed me this and how you use it while I was there in Barcelona. What is the name of that again?
So the Data Hub project.
Okay, for from LinkedIn.
Yes, it was internal project of LinkedIn in the beginning, and now it's an open source project. And Adevinta is one of the biggest contributors of this project.
Nice. Okay, let's talk about semantic layer now for a while. Actually, can you describe what a data semantic layer is, or semantic layer for data means, and how do you approach the semantic layer design for Adevinta?
Yes, this semantic layer is related with the domain market that I was explaining before. It's semantic layer could be different things. In, for instance, in a data fabric is something different. In a data mesh at the end, it's not so easy to create a semantic layer because the semantic layer is something ethereal in the middle of the connection of data products. It's something that appears in this mesh. Then in this implementation of semantic layer that we're saying, it's that in this concept to build a market of different domains, we are doing a modeling. We are aggregating different data source aligned approach, but with one proposal. It's all these objects are inside the same bounding context, but then means the same domain, and thinking these domains not in a really granular domains, in a domains that from that big domains in the company. Then at the end, it's a layer on our lakehouse. We have put this in a silver layer of the lakehouse because we are not using the medallion layering, the bronze, silver, gold in the lakehouse, because we are not thinking that bronze it's less important than gold. And for this reason, I don't like a lot the medallion layer. You are calling raw domain and models, because says in the first layer there are all the source aligned data products, everything is raw. In the second layer, just is grouping primary material in domains, just have domain modeling, limited in the domain modeling, and then the gold layer is for all the rest of models, whatever you want to do, a data mart or ML model, whatever you want. It's all the miscellany of all the analytics that you can do with. And for this reason, we are saying that this silver layer in the lakehouse, we have it converted in a kind of semantic layer. Because when you go there, you have these 13 big entities that each of them means a domain. Then this semantic layer, instead of being metadata in a catalog, is part of the design of this layer.
Great, thanks for explaining that. Now, just talking about software architecture and the influences of architecture, how have operational software architectures influenced data strategies?
This is a really good point because I have been working building data platforms in companies, and I have this feeling and seeing that the maturity in the operational side, in the application side, is something that in some moment arrives on data. I think that data is in around 3 and 5 years before, it's more or of the operational part, that it's when all the software craftsmanship or all the maturity in, for instance, CI/CD versioning of code, versioning of data, microservices architectures, these kind of things normally arrives in 2 or 3 years in the data side. And then for this reason, now appears data mesh once the microservices is something already mature. And I think so that there is a gap between the operational architecture and analytical architecture that starts in the moment when the operational databases was not used for analytics, in the moment when the analytics people was breaking the databases because the queries was not performing and was not possible to BI on top of the same database, the same Oracle, for instance, database used for the operational side. In this moment when was split the two walls, operational and analytical, just in a way how to scale, and the analytical was evolving from the relational databases to the distributed systems, to the non-relational wall, these kind of things, was creating a gap that operational world was once in one technologies and one way, and analytical in another way. But I think that now it's starting to converge again, because At the end, the operational world is also using distributed systems. It's not something only for data. And the data world, it's starting to be more close to the software engineering. In my case, for data engineers, always have been close to the software. But for the rest of the data roles, for data analysts, for data science, for BIers, this is not so clear. There are a lot of BIers that are not doing anything about code. And there are data scientists doing some queries because they are really focused on analytics part, but not on the development part. But once the big data was growing and the computation has to be more complex and more scalable, these kind of profiles from some years ago have doing this movement to be more close to the software world. Then now you cannot think in a data scientist that is not doing code. But 3 years ago, the most part of the data scientist was not doing really clear code or not doing code at all. Then once all this wall of analytics is moving close to the code and close to the software engineering, is when the moment when you can apply DevOps culture, you can apply software maturity or software lifecycle process for this kind of projects, and you can apply a lot of maturity on the operational side that in the moment that the users understand and is reducing the gap, you can apply these techniques. And I think that in some moment, we'll be together again. In some moment, we'll be unimaginable work with data without the same maturity of software engineering like is a mobile application, for instance.
Yeah, and you know, just to, again, sort of bring in domain-driven design, I would think that if the operations design, right, the domain model in the bounded context is publishing domain events, the closer that the data itself is available inside events, right, that are very explicitly named, this is what happened and this is the data that it happened with, that's going to take you a really far, you know, long way toward matching up, you know, bringing the operations and analytical sides together, because now you're both benefiting from exactly the same data. Now you may, again, right, structure it differently for analytics, but there's your source. That is the source of full truth, right? And you've got the full history. And what more could you want for analytics practically, except for someone to just figure it all out for you?
This is really, really important because once, for instance, in the beginning of the lake, the problem of the first lake that was become a data swamp. because for the reason, because once the data was pulled from operational databases and move it in another way, just to change the technology to instead of be a relational database, be in a lake, not relational and with distributed systems, all the metadata in the middle was completely lost. Then all the effort to do a really good domain-driven design on the application side with the business mindset once was pulled and gathered and just get some snapshots and some events in the other way, all this knowledge was completely lost. And then in the data was just discoverability of do cherry picking, rediscover again the domain map and the domain topology that in your operational part of your company is already there. Then it's true that a lot of companies have been done and is already done this rebuilding the domain metadata knowledge on top of the lakes that the company already have in their transactional and operational systems. Then it's a matter that probably not make sense to do the query in top of the operational database, but we need to connect in a good way. And this was the reason of the data contracts, is extract this data from this operational database, but maintain the metadata, maintain the meaning, and move this on the lake. But this domain that is already done, this modeling that is already done, don't have to be recreated and rediscovered again. Because when the people analytics saying that is the 20% of my time I'm doing analytics and the 80% of my time I'm preparing data, inside this 80% preparing, the people is thinking on cleaning, on reduced duplications, true, but the most part, it's rediscover the meaning. This preparation, it's nowhere is what means, but what means is something that is part of your company already working on that. It comes from somewhere where the people is creating knows what means. Then it's a matter that this knowledge, this metadata, have to move not just the value of the data itself, the value of the data and the enough metadata surrounding that maintain this effort on modeling on the product side, in the analytics side, maintaining this value as well.
Right. Good. Wow. So we've already talked about the DDD influence on data mesh and, you know, sort of how those two work together, how data mesh is influenced by it. And we have talked a little bit about the tooling involved already out in the industry. And I think probably one of the first questions that most either data architects or software architects would ask is, okay, so this data mesh thing sounds really cool, but where are the tools? And I think what's interesting about your world, at least, is that you've already got experience with some lakehouse tools or maybe DataMart tools or whatever that are sort of geared in a way that can support that. Can you tell us more about the tooling? And not that tooling is the most important thing, but you got to have tools to get the work done, right? So are we starting from scratch or what do we do?
Yes, exactly. It's one of the data mesh right now, it's a hype. It's a lot of people talking about that, but not there are a lot small practitioners of data mesh, because at the end, first needs some reorganization in the company, that not all the companies are in the position to do it, and the rest is that the people think that it's they need to reinvent all the tools or build again the tools or to do a mesh. We are not doing on this way, because we have a lakehouse and we have data warehousing. For instance, we have a lakehouse on S3 and also using Databricks, but we have a data warehousing using Redshift. Our storage is S3. We are fully on cloud on Amazon Web Services. We are using Hive, but also we are using Glue. We are using all the stuff and technologies that is providing Amazon to us. We have on top a data warehousing. We have on top a lakehouse. But the idea, it's was related with what I said before, in understand this minimum building block instead of be the lakehouse itself. The lakehouse is just a kind of self-serve platform. It's just an environment to create something more smaller, building block more smaller, that is this data product. Then the idea of this data product is can be interoperable in their own with other things. Then you can create a source-aligned data product inside the lakehouse, and you can create a consumer-aligned data product inside Redshift. The idea is how to put the technology and the components in top of these data sets in order that this data set on the data warehouse can be connected with a ML model done in another place on the company. It's instead of thinking that we are connecting the Redshift with with an ML platform done in Kubernetes. It's what in theory, it's not important where is. It's important connect a model done in a warehousing with an output of ML service that is in some Kubernetes ML platform, and join this, because in an analytical way you have to mix this data warehousing with this ML output. And in this case, it's the data products. If you go to the book of data mesh and the data products have defined input ports and output ports. And the input ports and output ports are the APIs of these products in a way of microservices mindset. These ports to interconnect one each other. Then when you achieve that some data set done in Lakehouse, not be just a data, is able to provide one or several output ports that you can interconnect between another data set done in a Redshift, and you have a tooling to mix it and work together, is when this effect of mesh appears, because the data is not kidnapped on a platform. It's there, but it's open to be connected in another data that is in another platform. Then the idea of platforms already exists, but it's not fun as a closed borders. It's something that once this data product have input and output ports, I can put data there and I can extract data there. I can interact with this piece of data. And this is the idea. Then it's true that our Lakehouse is using S3, but we have ways and frameworks to access this data that you can connect this data lake table inside an S3 bucket. You can connect it with a query that is doing a federated query between Redshift and Databricks, and put the result on Tableau, for instance. And this interconnection of different ports, this combining of data, and this final result is what building this experience of that you are in just one platform. But the important is not being just one platform, is be just in one way to how to work with data.
Very nice. Thank you for explaining. Well, let's say at least hopefully for Adivinta Spain, and maybe hopefully even with influence into Germany, other parts of Europe and the world, let's say in 5 years, you are in pretty good shape with data mesh. Maybe not every team is in the mesh. That would be really, I think, very aggressive, but maybe possible. But let's say 5 years from now, you can actually share data on the mesh to Germany and back and forth, or whoever needs to be on this sort of federated mesh, so to speak. What does the future hold then, right, for analytics in general? What's the really big picture from that point? What starts to happen?
Good. Specifically in Adivinta, I think so that we are in a good scenario, that this reorganization is moving from country division to vertical division. Country is not related with business, it's related with geography, but vertical, yes. Then this movement of reorganization is helping a lot in thinking the company but in a native way as a kind of mesh, because is divided by these three big domains at the end, okay, with subdomains.
You made me think of this. It's sort of like there's work from home and then there's work from country.
Yeah.
Right? It's just there's no real boundaries there in terms of operations and analytics. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, don't worry. It's just to remark that this will help a lot to us in order to build this mesh, because it's not just a technology challenge. It's also a process, people, and organizational challenge. Then this organization will have a lot to us, and it's true that what I said before, there are a lot of engineering challenges of how interconnect, how to make it possible that something created in Databricks could be interoperable with something created in EMR, with something created in Redshift, with something created in Tableau. And probably not make sense. The idea of the mesh is that we are trying to put under control this mesh. Not everything can be connected with everything because there are policies. Then the idea is this mesh has to provide interoperability, but under control. If something cannot be connected by a policy, then in a technical way, this has to be banned or not possible, let's say. Then it's a double challenge. It's make it interoperable, but at the same time, not break policies, not connect everything with everything, because then it's something that sometimes they call it data mess with S instead of data mesh. Data mess is when you start to interconnect everything with everything, then you cannot recognize nothing. Then we need a lot of interoperability, but under control. And in the future, it's seen that I can see some evolutions in the technologies to achieve it. But it's true that I can see the help of another hype that in data is really famous, is the generative AI, the AI, that will help to us in two topics. One is because now with this hype, the demand of have curated and clear and data under control, it's increasing a lot. Because once and then this effort to put the governance as a design thinking in the platforms is something that it's increasing the value, because once you need a lot of data and everything under control, put control from the beginning, it's starting to be in the past we in the platform teams we was really alone thinking on quality. Everything was thinking on final results and final value, but on quality from the beginning was something not clear for everyone. And now it's starting to be important. And the second help of this hype is that at the end, the people wants to interact with the data, not just with code and queries, wants to interact with the data with a natural language, with just doing analytics, not doing just queries or operational, doing questions about, I have a business questions and one answer of that. Or I want to discover some data in the company, but not find this data about the name of the origin, about the meaning. And probably we are far of these objectives, but with the data contracts, we are achieving. Instead of, and now the searcher of the data catalog is not some clicks on a structure to try to find the origin. It's a text bar that you say, I want data from this domain. And this, thanks with the data, with the metadata of the contract, this query can be solved. The logic that is behind, it's not so complex, but if you mix the power of the generative, the LLMs and the generative technologies with the really rich metadata from the beginning coming from the data platforms and the data mesh, I see a really good convergence in the future. Let's say we need a richness on data and metadata. This means quality. And mix this to train models to answer questions. And then not just questions about the value. I want the number of the clicks on ads in some period, because this is related with the value. But I want to answer business questions like and this campaign is working or not working, this kind of things. And I think that improving on quality from the data, and this means improving on design from the beginning, on governance or from the beginning on the data platforms, mix it with AI, how to interact with this value, I think that we'll draw the future of analytics. It will draw the ML algorithms and the KPIs, these kind of things will remain. But these business questions about data will start to be answered, not just doing pipelines or just doing SQL, will be started to be solved by a free text terminal where you can ask if the results of your company are correct or not, and you will be answered about that, but not by magics, about having from the beginning the data under control and clear.
Yeah, for sure. I consider there's one, pardon me, I consider that there's a third benefit to the AI hype, and that is if you need funding, it's AI, but if you're just getting the work done, it's called machine learning, right? So, so yeah, that's going to get funding. No, but seriously, what my concern is right now is that large language model, LLM, is being seen as sort of this panacea. When in a large case, what's getting generated is word salad, right? It's just sort of like, throw everything in the bowl and it looks plausible, right? It's like, wow, this is amazing. How, like, I've been searching the internet for, and this is true, right? I've been searching the internet for a certain set of algorithms, and I will tell you, Google can't find them. But I asked ChatGPT the questions, and I was amazed at the answers I got. And I was like, how in the world are they getting this stuff? And then I went to like an expert in that area, and they said, throw this stuff out. It's garbage. It is absolutely fictitious, right? So, you know, and that had to do with values, right? Like you said, it's not just words, but you need to ask intelligent questions or ask questions that give you intelligent answers about values. And I think that is the huge gap right now. So if we're going to actually make progress in that area and not just throw answers at people, is that more machine learning or is it just better, whatever algorithms in general, what is it called? Linear regression and things like that, or what? What do we do?
Well, I think that it's not mainly related with the type of algorithm. I think that the difference is related in the classic AI or in the classic data analytics journey. At the end, at the beginning of the journey, from data gathering to at the end to the result or the insight or the result presenting, there are a lot of steps where the human contribution is there, putting their problem-driven mindset. Okay. This data makes sense, not make sense. I have to correct this. I have to clean that. If you go in some data pipeline from some products, there are corrections in a lot of places in order to make it better the results, because there are control of humans in different places and are or correcting errors or putting more metadata or putting some context. This is in this way. The reason is because connecting with what I said before, because this metadata is not a matter that not exists. It's a matter that is lost. And some expert have to put their mind there and recover it. But
except the events can actually be created with metadata in them.
Not, exactly.
It's separate from the event, but you can still put metadata there. Yeah.
Then once the interconnection between the operational part of the software with the analytic parts of the software, the data is not just moving the values, it's moving the metadata, then all this context, it's not lost, and it's there, and is machine readable. It will be the moment when you will have part of the values, the literal values, you will have enough metadata to train this LLM or other kind of ML models with all this metadata. The problem is that this metadata right now is not enough automated and not exist. And is it that now that the LLMs, it's or the ChatGPT or Google Gemini, these kind of things, it's answering generic questions because are trained with this generic knowledge that is gathering from internet and public places. But the questions about your specific company, about the specific numbers of your company, not generic things about history or about public publications, about your company, you need the values, but you need all the metadata surrounding these values in a good way and train with all of that. Then the lack is not in the way how to train, because the algorithms exist and the computer power exists. The lack is have the your data of your company enough fresh and enough with enough metadata, or also fresh and with quality process behind. Once this will be covered, the data will be, all the process in the company will be secure, compliant with quality, and the data will be fresh, but not only the data, all the metadata will be also fresh and consistent, then it will be the moment to train with your real knowledge of this specific company, and then the experience that you are achieving putting questions on ChatGPT about tell me about who was the king of some country in I don't know the age. This kind of questions, you will do it about results of your company because you will have a specific knowledge and knowledge just under your control, not general, and it will be always available to do these kind of questions. But for me, the lack, it's not on better algorithms how to train, it's on the quality and the lineage and the interoperability of the metadata inside the companies.
Yeah, in fact, I think it was probably 8-9 months ago, I had the opportunity to speak with Scott. I apologize for maybe mispronouncing his name. I don't remember his family name pronunciation, but I think it's like Heilman. Maybe you know him. He's from the U.S., but now lives in the Netherlands. And he's basically said the same thing. The tools are not the problem. The tools are out there. It's the lineage, it's actually the organization, right? The organization first has to get into the mode, and your vertical, you know, sort of reorganization is helping with that. And there's a lot to look forward to. And I do hope that even in 5 years, we can, you know, look back and say, wow, that was a very sort of, you know, futuristic discussion that we had, because it's worked out that way. That'd be pretty cool. So we need to wrap up here, and I'm just thinking we better not put your email address on your bio, because the day after this is published, the podcast, you're going to wake up to 1,087 new emails in your inbox, right? And, and so, you know, since I'm guessing you don't want that to happen, or maybe you do. but the point is, where do people go to learn more about this? Of course, there's Shamak's book and, you know, some other resources out there, maybe book resources, but where do they go and learn more about this, the data mesh?
Well, important now, I'm in a couple of communities, in a data mesh learning community, but mainly of this content, it's now, how I consuming this content on LinkedIn posts and with some posts there. But at the end, it's the book or the material or the literature about data mesh, it's really quite new. The book it's there, but the people is saying that it's not finished and needs to be rewrite with some practical experience. I think that Adevinta could be one of the who provides their experience how to do it. At least one of the examples. I have been speaking in some conferences about that. But for instance, the data contracts, the book of all really about data contracts, it's right now on pre-release. Even it's not an official release. It's wrote by Chad Anderson, that is really famous guy about data contracts. And the book of data contracts is something that it sounds really in a hype. It sounds a lot in a lot of publications on Medium and LinkedIn. But the book in the one of the most famous book factories like is O'Reilly. It's not official yet. It's a pre-release. Then right now everything is about communities, conferences and relations on social networks, because it's not still mature, all the material about data mesh, about data products. But it's true that if you go to LinkedIn post or Twitter post and you are looking for data contracts, you will find a lot of articles and some books, not a lot of books, and some books about this topic. Then, in my case, I get the book of data mesh from Samak as a one of the key references. This new book of data contracts, I was reading the first chapters and looks really interesting. But also there are other influencers on networks talking about that was really interesting to follow. In my case, and I'm just doing some publications, not a lot, because I'm really focused on implement it, on make it real in the company. And for instance, in our case, data contracts is not something really theoretic. It's to reuse something that already existing in the company in a way that achieve this data contract effect, let's say. And then this is what happens when you are trying to apply these theoretic principles like data mesh, data contracts, data products in your company, that you need to adapt in your specific tooling, in your specific culture, in your specific skill sets of the people. And then you need to do some innovation on how to apply it. And I think that will make sense. I think that I also telling to my team that once we have been presenting these data contracts on a Databricks conference, on a data management summit conference, and these kind of things, but probably we'll need to tell more because the industry is demanding a specific examples, not just theorics, that is also important, because put standard names in something that is everybody doing the same, it's really important. But also it's important share the examples and share the lessons learned, that the success and the failures as well, because there are a lot of failures to do in a mesh implementing.
Yeah. Without sounding cliche, hopefully the failures are fast, right? They're the ones that happen in a few hours or days rather than months and years. But anyway, you know, it's been a real pleasure, Mark, to speak with you again. I look forward, hopefully we can get to Barcelona again in the near future, and please say hello to Gustavo. He's one of the nicest people I've ever met, really enthusiastic about the work that he does and so forth. And I you know, what I really enjoy is that it's early in my morning, or, you know, relatively early in my morning, but for you, it's late in the afternoon. And the sparkle in your eyes when you talk about this just says everything. You know, you really enjoy it. You're excited about it, and you have a lot of energy for it. So I appreciate that a lot. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me in the podcast, and has been a pleasure again to meet with you.
Okay. See you soon.
If you enjoyed this interview, please subscribe and stay tuned for more. This podcast is sponsored and produced by Kalele, makers of Domo Roboto and the Zoom platform. To learn more, visit kalele.io. That's kalele.io. Thanks for listening.